This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
As a small business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Struggling to resolve the trade issue. Good morning, I'm Jennifer Kashinka in for Gordon Deal, along with Rasa Kay on this Monday, June 10th. Here's what we have for you this hour.
President Trump raises the specter of imposing very profitable new tariffs on Mexico despite Friday's deal.
Joe Biden slips in the latest Iowa poll as Sanders, Warren, and Buttigieg gain ground.
United Technologies and Raytheon are merging in an aerospace mega deal.
And will tonight's game be the last at Oracle Arena for the Warriors?
They've wanted to build this arena since the new owners bought the team in 2012. They wanted to kind of provide a sort of Madison Square Garden or, you know, a Staples Center like in L.A. for San Francisco. They wanted to have a world-class arena in what they consider to be a world-class city.
Michael Weinreb of The Ringer will be here in about 20 minutes with that story. President Trump's threat to impose tariffs on Mexico was averted by an immigration deal late Friday, but questions remain about whether the deal adds up to real progress or if most of the provisions in it had been put in place long ago. Under the immigration deal, Mexico largely reaffirmed existing commitments to curb migration from Central America by boosting enforcement on its southern border and expanding efforts in Mexico to handle migrants seeking asylum in the U.S. According to Trump, the deal could prompt an increase in Mexican purchases of U.S. agricultural products, though no such language was included in the pact. Republican Senator Roy Blunt told CBS it's a good agreement.
I think this is a big win for both sides, and I think the president's willingness to use tariffs, even though I'm not a big supporter of tariffs, he is, and his willingness to use that probably helped produce a result.
Democratic presidential candidate Pete Buttigieg questioned the president's tactics.
It was clear the administration itself hadn't really thought this through. They just went to the brink, frightened the markets, got a superficial concession, and then went back right back to where we were. This is no way to manage our trade policy or our immigration policy.
Even as Trump hailed the administration's deal as a successful agreement yesterday, he tweeted that he might again seek to impose punishing tariffs on Mexico if its cooperation falls short. The sprawling field of Democratic presidential hopefuls are making clear that Joe Biden is in their crosshairs. Following a week in which Biden reversed his stance on abortion funding, several 2020 candidates sought to contrast themselves with the Democratic frontrunner at the Iowa Hall of Fame celebration yesterday, one of the party's annual fundraisers. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, Biden's chief rival according to polls, said Democrats won't defeat President Trump unless they bring excitement and energy into the campaign.
What our job is not only to stand up to Trump, the most dangerous president in American history. Our job is to do exactly the opposite of what he is trying to do. He wants to divide us. We bring our people together.
Senator Cory Booker of New Jersey says Democrats have bigger plans than defeating the president.
Beating him will get us out of the valley, but it will not get us to the mountaintop. Democrats, we can't let this election be about what we are against. It must be an election about what we are for.
Each candidate was given 5 minutes to boil down their stump speech, and at times, in an Academy Award-like manner, candidates were cut off with music playing over their speeches. Since the State Department began rejecting all embassy requests to hoist rainbow flags outside the mission buildings during LGBTQ Pride Month this year, some U.S. diplomats have been finding ways to get around the new policy. This morning's Dave Duncan has more.
The facade of the U.S. missions in Seoul is partially hidden behind large rainbow flags, while the embassy in New Delhi is aglow in rainbow-colored lights. The website for the embassy in Santiago shows a video of the chief diplomat raising a rainbow flag last month. U.S. diplomats in Jerusalem joined a march for pride and tolerance, and several ambassadors have tweeted photos of themselves in local pride parades. A practice routinely approved for most of the decade at many embassies now requires top-level approval from the State Department, but this year, all requests were denied. Jen?
The flap over the flag started when the State Department did not send out an official cable this year with guidelines for marking Pride Month as it has in years past.
Michigan is one of the best places in the country to do business. But you don't have to take our word for it. Take Evan Lyles, CEO of Roush Enterprises, instead.
For the people that are involved in product development, there couldn't be more unique and exciting opportunities that are really going to shape the future of the world. It's a really exciting time to be in Michigan.
Big things are happening in business here. Find out why by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity.
Jennifer Kashinka in for Gordon Deal along with Rasa Kay. Reminder, we can connect on social media, friend us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter with the username @ThisMorningShow. Louisiana State Representative Katrina Jackson has been called plenty of names, a fake Democrat, a traitor, even a Republican, but she prefers another label, Whole Life Democrat. The two-term legislator has repeatedly defied her party with her staunch pro-life advocacy, yet Jackson is more than a random political outlier. Reporter Valerie Richardson at the Washington Times says Jackson is helping carve a niche in her party for Democrats who oppose abortion but support a host of social programs. Valerie, what examples did you find here?
Yeah, in Louisiana, which is a pretty pro-life state, the governor, who was a Democrat, as you know, last week, signed a fetal heartbeat bill, which was, you know, I think came as a shock to a lot of people that, you know, but I think a lot of people were blaming it on just one guy. This is, you know, this is John Bel Edwards. That's just, you know, he just happens to be pro-life. He's kind of an anomaly. Well, 17 House Democrats in Louisiana also supported the fetal heartbeat bill, as did 7 Senate Democrats. And they are not alone. We are seeing Democrats voting against aggressive late-term bills this year and voting in favor of fetal heartbeat bills this year in the state legislatures in a way that I've never seen before. And Katrina Jackson, a Louisiana state representative who's a Democrat and pro-life, she says this is part of the whole life movement. It's basically Democrats who support social programs but also oppose abortion.
And as she says in your story, she is Christian, number one.
Exactly. Yeah, she is pro-life based on her Christian beliefs. So that's number one for her. Her other concern is Katrina Jackson is African American, and she points to the large number of abortions that take place in the African American community. They're disproportionately represented when it comes to U.S. abortions each year, and she has a real concern about that as well. And we're seeing that in other states too. In North Carolina, for example, this year, you saw 6 Democrats break off from the party and all vote to support an infanticide bill. The ones that basically say you have to deliver medical care to an infant born alive after an abortion. Well, the six Democrats who broke off, 5 of them are Black, and 1 of them was Native American. So we're starting to see a schism here in the Democratic community on the issue of abortion that is actually a racial schism in some ways.
So what's causing people to speak out like this?
I think what happened this year is that we had so much abortion legislation in the state legislatures, both, you know, on the one end, the fetal heartbeat bills, on the other end, the late-term codify Roe v. Wade bills, that people had to take a stand in a way that they normally don't have to. Generally, nobody wants to vote on abortion bills, and if they do, it's on, you know, kind of on the fringes, you know, parental notification, parentalized, you know, that sort of thing. You know, smaller bills that most people can generally agree on. But this year, because of what happened at the Supreme Court with Justice Kavanaugh getting on, the 5-4 majority, Planned Parenthood and the pro-choice movement went all out for, we're going to codify Roe, we're going to strip away the abortion restrictions that we see in state laws, and we're going to basically put a bulwark now against the Supreme Court in case they should one day try to overturn Roe. They got a bill passed immediately in New York. There was a big celebration that you might have heard about, and it turned people off so much that a lot of these codify Roe bills wound up basically sinking. And in some cases, it was Democrats who were sinking them. In Rhode Island, on the committee that was looking at a late-term bill, the vote against it was, you saw 4 Democrats swing to the other side to defeat the bill in committee. In New Mexico, you had another late-term bill, another codify Roe bill, and you saw 6 Democrats in the state Senate switch over and vote with the Republicans to kill that bill. I think what basically happened was that they were like, okay, we can be pro-choice up to a point, but we can't vote for these late-term bills. We can't vote for this lack of restrictions.
Thanks, Valerie. Valerie Richardson at the Washington Times. This portion of the program is brought to you by Quip. A healthy smile is a great gift we can all have, so give it to your dad for Father's Day or a celebration gift for your new grad. Give them the one-size-fits-all Quip Electric Toothbrush. It's more than just a toothbrush. Quip is a new oral health routine. By the way, Quip's guiding features make sticking to good oral health care habits simple. Plus, signing your dad or grad up for a subscription is only $5, which helps them save and refresh their brush every 3 months, as recommended by dentists. If you're like me, it's easy to brush too hard, but Quip offers sensitive sonic vibrations for a more effective clean that's also gentle on sensitive gums. One of my favorite Quip features is the built-in 2-minute timer. It pulses every 30 seconds to remind me to switch sides, which helps me clean my whole mouth evenly. That's why I love Quip and why over 1 million happy, healthy mouths do too. Quip starts at just $25, and if you get to quip.com/Gordon right now, you can get your first refill pack for free. That's your first refill pack free at getquip.com/Gordon. It's 20 minutes after the hour. Rasa Kay is here with more of America's First News.
Well, Jennifer, President Trump tweeted additional details about the U.S.-Mexico tariff agreement will be announced at the appropriate time, after critics suggested the deal didn't accomplish much and much of what it contained wasn't new. Republican Senator Tom Tillis of North Carolina defended the president on Fox News Sunday Morning Futures.
So I think this is a great first step. We've got a lot more work to do, but I'm happy with the president's action and happy with the result. The president used what I think was a very important tool to convince Mexico that securing their southern border and working with us is in all of our best interest. So I think this is a great first step. We've got a lot more work to do, but I'm happy with the president's action and happy with the result.
House Democrats have scheduled a series of hearings this week on the Mueller report as they intensify their focus on the Russia probe and pick up the pace on an investigative path that some of them hope leads to impeachment of President Trump. A woman died after a crane collapsed onto her apartment building in downtown Dallas late yesterday, 5 others seriously hurt. It's believed strong winds toppled the crane, part of a savage storm that tore down trees and power lines and temporarily cut off electricity to Dallas Love Field Airport. Michigan forecasters warn the massive Midwest storm system is expected to churn waves of up to 6 feet high along one section of Lake Michigan's shoreline, with the possibility of flooding shoreline dune erosion and piers swamped by high water today from Grand Haven south to the Indiana border. The Mississippi River notched its second highest crest ever along the St. Louis riverfront. The river is expected to stay in the major flood stage another week at least. The Boston Red Sox, offering all possible support to retired slugger David Ortiz, shot outside a Dominican Republic nightclub last night by a suspect on a motorbike who was then pummeled by the crowd before being taken into custody. Ortiz is expected to recover. A commuter train derailment Saturday just an hour before the Boston Pride Parade stepped off and 2 hours before a Red Sox doubleheader at Fenway Park was not a mechanical or infrastructure issue, according to the Massachusetts Bay Transportation Authority. It forced hundreds off the train and sent 10 people to the hospital. The maintenance facility has that train for inspection and the investigation continues. Well, how do you say jinx? In a letter published by the St. Louis Post-Dispatch yesterday, St. Louis Blues owner Tom Stillman thanked the fans after the elation of breaking through and bringing St. Louis its first ever Stanley Cup. Minor problem. The Blues hadn't actually won it, and they still had to play last night's Game 6 of the final against the Boston Bruins, which Boston won, forcing a Game 7 in Beantown Wednesday. The letter appeared in the digital edition, and it got pulled. But boy,
oops,
boy, did readers notice.
Thanks, Rosser. Game 7 is coming up. Will tonight's game be the last ever for the Golden State Warriors at the famed Oracle Arena? This morning's Gordon Deal has a story.
We're speaking with Michael Weinreb, contributing writer to TheRinger.com. He's got a fascinating piece entitled 11 Miles, But a World Away. The Warriors make their last stand in Oakland. All right, so as you point out, the Warriors make this move from Oakland to this kind of upscale area of San Francisco. And especially this one guy is particularly not on board. Explain his reasoning here.
Yeah, I spoke to a man named Alan Jones who's lived in San Francisco basically his entire life. And he's been protesting this move the whole time, mainly because the Warriors are moving from a largely black neighborhood in East Oakland, which has never had a ton of money, and they're moving to this new neighborhood in the Mission Bay part of San Francisco, where the median household income is $134,000. And he just feels like, you know, first of all, that San Francisco stole Oakland's team away from them, and they've sort of exposed the kind of deep, you know, social and cultural and racial divides in the Bay Area as it gentrifies in ways that people really haven't got a handle on yet.
So is he completely opposed to this, or does he have a different solution? Like, what does he want out of all this?
I think what he would ideally want would be, well, he put a proposition on the ballot in San Francisco last year, you know, seeking that San Francisco would apologize to Oakland for stealing their team and would promise not to do it again. I mean, I think in an ideal world, he would want them to stay in Oakland in some way, shape, or form, whether it's at their current arena or to build a new arena in Oakland. Now, that's obviously not going to happen at this point since the new arena is pretty much finished, but he's persistent about it and just feels like he wants to, I think, make a larger case about what's wrong with this city and what's wrong with this region. And then just it kind of encapsulates a lot of the angst that people feel in the Bay Area at this point, who really a lot of, you know, working class people just can't afford to live here anymore.
To his point, and one you backed up in the story, what'd you say, like the suites going up in this new arena, like go for $2 million and Metallica tickets on the floor for better than $6,000 each?
Yeah, and, you know, the people who I talked to who are longtime season ticket holders for the Warriors who have had tickets since the 1960s, you know, their tickets almost doubled in price, and they have to pay this licensing fee, which is basically a 30-year loan to the Warriors that they would get paid back, you know, interest-free in 30 years. And, you know, one fan who I talked to said that loan was $70,000.
This morning's Gordon Deal with Michael Weinreb, contributing writer at TheRinger.com. It's coming up on 30 Minutes After the Hour on This Morning, America's First News.
This human resources professional is a rock star thanks to Kronos. And this is her hype song.
I'm the spark before the fire. I'm the power in the train. I
have HR, payroll, talent, and time.
I'm the dream and you should know that.
Now we're engaging all the best people.
Kronos, HR solutions for the modern workforce and the people who support them. Learn more at kronos.com/HR swagger.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show, like us on Facebook, or send us an email, thismorning@compassmedianetworks.com.
On this Monday, June 10th, Jennifer Koshinka in for Gordon Deal, along with Rasa Kay. Some of our top stories and headlines. President Trump again raises the specter of tariffs on Mexico days after a deal is set. Former Red Sox star David Ortiz is shot in a Dominican Republic bar. United Technologies will merge with Raytheon. Rafa Nadal wins his 12th French Open. And will tonight mark the end of the Warriors dynasty? That story in about 20 minutes. Employers added only 75,000 jobs in May, which was a much lower number than expected. Revised figures also showed employers added fewer jobs in April and March than previously reported. What does this all mean for the labor market and the overall economy? Eric Morath of the Wall Street Journal joins us now to sort it out. Eric, why has hiring slowed?
Well, I think a couple factors are at play, but the overarching one is I think employers are tapping the brakes a bit. We've seen a lot of news out there, trade tensions, concerns about the financial markets, just the overall economy slowing down. And I think after what had been a couple of years of really strong hiring in 2017 and 2018, employers are sort of tapping the brakes, maybe being a little bit more cautious month to month on filling jobs. Another factor, though, that we're looking at carefully is that the unemployment rate is really low. It's at a 50-year low. So there's not a lot of workers out there. And so we're talking to employers that saying, yeah, well, we actually do want to hire more workers. I can't find them. I need to train them. I need to spend more time looking for them, 3 or 4 months to fill a job now. So that could be another thing that will just slow the pace of job growth at this time.
We are seeing that every month from small business owners that they're having trouble filling jobs. Is that across the board?
Yeah, you know, it really does. It varies a bit by industry, but I think generally it's the challenge. You know, we're at a near record high number of unfilled jobs at this point. So we're hearing both that like higher tech jobs, engineering jobs, people that have advanced skills and advanced degrees, those are always hard to fill, and they're very hard to fill now. On the other hand, we're seeing, you know, maybe on the entry-level part of the job market, you know, there's some challenges there as well. For one, some folks say, I need a little bit more than a minimum wage job if I'm going to put my kids in daycare and going to, you know, pay to commute. And, you know, that all costs a lot of money. And, you know, $8 or $9 an hour might not make it worth me finding a job. And on the flip side, you know, employers might need to loosen up a little bit and sort of say, well, maybe you had some criminal history. Maybe your credit's not the best, but we're going to, you know, take you in because we need a worker. And some employers are doing that, and others are cautious about making that change.
We're speaking with Eric Marath of the Wall Street Journal. Eric, talk a little bit more about those wages. Where are we on pay right now?
So, yeah, pay is interesting. We've seen about a 3% raise from a year ago. So that's pretty good historically. And it's especially good given that the inflation rate is pretty low. So prices aren't rising that much and your pay is. So that's a good thing, right? But it's not accelerating. So the traditional economic theory is when the unemployment rate reaches extreme low levels, inflation should rise. And that's what happened in, say, like the 1990s. We're not seeing the pay raises at the pace of the 1990s, even given that, you know, prices are holding mostly in check.
Are there still many workers who have part-time jobs or many part-time jobs all cobbled together who still want a full-time job?
Well, I'm sure there's still plenty of those types of folks out there. They are kind of shrinking in number. One of the numbers that we look at is a broader measure of unemployment that it does include those that are working part-time but would prefer a full-time job. And that fell to almost a two-decade low last month. So to me, what that says is a lot of the people that are in the labor market that are, you know, ready to take jobs or take on more hours, they're finding opportunities, but trying to pull people off the sidelines is getting to be a challenge.
Eric, will this weaker than expected May report combined with some other data lead the Fed to cut rates?
Well, my colleagues here at the Wall Street Journal are reporting that that's certainly in play, a rate cut. I don't think that this unemployment report by itself will be the cause. Let's keep in mind, we're 50-year low unemployment rate. That's one of the Fed's mandates is low unemployment. So in that case, job well done.
Why is the stock market so enamored with low interest rates?
Well, if you have low interest rates, that generally boosts stock prices, right? So the alternative, when interest rates rise, that makes bonds more attractive. Low rates makes people a little more flush to spend and invest, and, you know, that's generally good for stocks.
Thanks, Eric. Eric Marath of the Wall Street Journal. It's 21 minutes before the hour. Jennifer Kashinka in for Gordon Deal along with Ross Akay. Now there are even more ways to get This Morning on Demand. Download the This Morning with Gordon Deal app for your Apple or Android device. Find our daily podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and more. Or tell Alexa or Google to play This Morning with Gordon Deal, and you'll instantly be connected to America's First News. We might not be buying as many new cars these days, but the auto sector is still fairly strong. As Adrian Roberts of the Wall Street Journal tells us, dealers are now relying on alternatives such as their service departments. Adrian, how are dealerships making money these days?
Yeah, so it's been interesting to watch them because traditionally, dealers are all about selling new cars. That's where they made their majority of their profit historically. But what we've seen kind of in these last few years, and especially in the first quarter of this year, is they are really trying to pivot away from new cars. You know, prices keep going up. It's getting really unaffordable for U.S. consumers to afford a new car. So what they're doing is they're trying to sell more used cars. So you're seeing a lot of them opening these standalone used car centers as a way to kind of attract people to buy used cars. And you're also seeing them try to drive more profit out of their service departments. And you're seeing them get more revenue there because people are holding onto their cars longer, meaning they need to get them serviced more. And then the other kind of revenue driver for them is the finance and insurance office, the dreaded F&I office. And they're trying to sell more add-ons, whether it's extended warranties or insurance for dings and dents. And that's giving them kind of a boost as well.
Let's start with that last thing you mentioned first. The last time I went to buy a car, they were really pressing the financing. And it was like big time pressure, not from the price, but then, you know, sign up for this deal. That seems to be the way they're going. They're making more money on that.
Yeah, you're not alone. So that actually increased last year, just the penetration of these products. So I think dealers really see an opportunity here. If they're getting someone in and they're not buying that expensive of a car, they're saying, here's how we're going to make up for that. We're going to sell them more of these products. And some of the, you know, to their defense, it's just they're doing a better job explaining these products because some of them may be worth it to some consumers and they're getting more sales that way. I think the other end of the spectrum is you're hearing from people that they're just getting a little more pressure to kind of buy these add-ons. And those, you know, they have a really high profit margin on those products. And so like AutoNation launched their own line of these kind of branded F&I products, and they're bringing in big bucks for them. So, you know, I think if you're a consumer going out to the dealership soon, you might feel that a little more because dealers just can't rely on revenue from new car sales.
We're speaking with Adrian Roberts of the Wall Street Journal. Adrian, how have online car buying sites hurt dealers, and also the fact that consumers are more knowledgeable about pricing when they go in?
Yeah, well, I think that's like the big thing is people have so much information readily available about what they should be paying for a car and what they're willing to pay. And so I think you're seeing with Carvana, which is the online used car buying site, which has the vending machines and Shift Technologies and a few others, is a lot more transparency around used car prices. And new car has become pretty transparent, but now you're seeing that even more. And so dealers are saying, you know, we're having people come into the dealership and say, no, here's exactly what I'm willing to pay. I saw this online and I won't pay any more. Well, I mean, that can hurt dealers' profit margin on that sale. And I mean, furthermore, these companies are gaining in popularity. So I think we're starting to see them take some business. And I think as people become more and more comfortable buying things online, you know, it's we're going to see those sales for those companies increase even more.
You mentioned service earlier, and I found it very interesting, your story, that as we move to electric vehicles, there's less service required for them. I was surprised by that.
Yeah, I know. It's really interesting. But when you think about like a gasoline-powered vehicle with the motor and the engine and all these kind of complicated components, electric cars are much more battery on wheels. They have fewer parts. And so you'll hear from dealers, and I mean, you know, only 1% of the U.S. population has an electric car at this point. But as that adoption increases, dealers are kind of already starting to gripe, saying, you know, this isn't really where we're making our money.
Adrian Roberts of the Wall Street Journal. It's 12 minutes before the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
Michigan is one of the best places in the country to do business. But you don't have to take our word for it. Take Patty Poppe's, president and CEO of Consumers Energy, instead.
All of the innovation that's occurring around robotics, AI, it's happening here in Michigan. We have chemical companies, we have pharmaceutical companies, we have medical device manufacturers. Michigan is a magnet for innovators and dreamers.
Big things are happening in business here. Find out why by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity.
Jennifer Kashinka in for Gordon Deal. It's 9 minutes before the hour. Rasa Kay is here with more of America's First News. Well, Jennifer, tariffs scheduled to go into effect today against Mexican goods are indefinitely suspended following Mexico's agreement to take stronger measures to curb immigration. But Rhode Island Democratic Congressman David Cicilline told Fox News Sunday President Trump's actions haven't helped the crisis at the border.
Look, this is a very complicated issue. We, in fact, appropriated significant additional resources in the last appropriations bill. We may have to do more. We need to be sure that we have enough immigration judges, that people can be processed quickly. But the problem has been made worse by many of the policies of this administration. What the president promised was to fix this problem, he's made it worse.
In a series of tweets, President Trump defended the agreement in the face of reporting that much of what it contained wasn't new and directly attacked the New York Times and CNN, calling them the enemy of the people. At least one person was killed, five others seriously injured when a crane crashed into a downtown Dallas apartment building yesterday afternoon after strong storms battered the city. That storm also knocked out power to hundreds of thousands of people and briefly Dallas Love Field Airport. In Southern California, the problem's hot, dry weather, a fast-moving brush fire
fire erupted near the huge Six Flags Magic Mountain amusement park north of Los Angeles Sunday, setting off panic and confusion as park visitors were first told to evacuate as smoke surrounded the area before fire officials asked them to stay put while they worked to contain the blaze. No injuries reported. A panic caused by gun fears at a pride parade in Washington, D.C. Saturday night sent people running through the city streets. Police say the rush caused minor injuries, but that no shots were fired. A man with a BB gun, angry at another man for hitting his partner, allegedly threatened to use it. He was arrested. 87-year-old Elaine May won another Tony Award last night for her work in the play The Waverly Gallery, and wheelchair-bound singer-actress Ally Stroker made history with her Tony for Oklahoma and dedicated it to disabled children.
For every kid who is watching tonight who has a disability, who has a limitation or a challenge, who has been waiting to see themselves represented in this arena, you are...
And the musical Hadestown took 8 Tony Awards. And people from near and far detoured through the southern New Jersey city of Salem over the weekend to get a look at a dead tree. The Salem oak was blown down in a storm Thursday night, and even on its side, pretty impressive, it was 600 years old.
That's kind of sad.
Yeah.
Thanks, Rasa.
Well, after a stunning come-from-behind 105-92 win at the Oracle Arena Friday night, the Toronto Raptors are one win away from capturing the first NBA title in franchise history. And that means their opponents, the two-time defending champion Golden State Warriors, are one loss away from elimination. Given the year-long speculation surrounding the free agency future of multiple Warriors stars, especially Kevin Durant, and the speculation that important longtime contributors like Sean Livingston could retire at the end of the year, this might also mean the Warriors dynasty is one loss away from coming to a close. Golden State is one of just 9 teams since the ABA-NBA merger to win the title in at least 2 consecutive years. Among that group, the Warriors are one of 5 teams to win 3 titles in 4 or fewer years. How did those dynasties end? Well, all but one saw its run come to an end with a loss against an opponent that either played in or won the NBA Finals that year. The mid to late 80s Lakers were swept by the Bad Boys Detroit Pistons in the 1989 final. 2 years later, the Pistons were swept out of the playoffs by the eventual three-peat champion Chicago Bulls. This Warriors team has overcome a lot during its time together, but no team in Golden State's current position, down 3-1 and having lost both games at home, has ever come back to win a playoff series played under the current 2-2-1-1-1 format. That'll do it for this hour. For Rasa Kay, I'm Jennifer Kishinka. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.
As a small business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.